Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another very special episode of Zed Games, Australia's premier and most beloved video game radio show. And a very special welcome to our new listeners joining us on the Community Radio Network. Now, what have we got coming up on this episode, Mr. Razor? Also, hello, Mr. Razor.
Hello, Lee.
Would you mind introducing our other cast members?
Absolutely. Well, to my left is Miss Candy Payne.
Hi, everybody.
And we're also joined by Mr. Jody McGregor.
Hi, everyone.
Now, coming up on today's episode of Zed Games, Candy, you're going to be talking about Battle Block Theatre.
Yes, I am.
And Lee, you've also got a review for us.
Yes, I'll be talking about Shadowrun Returns a little later in the show.
First, let's kick this episode of Zed Games off with the news headlines.
This is Zed Games News, bringing you gaming news headlines from Australia and around the world.
Phil Fish, the indie designer responsible for hit puzzle platformer Fez, abruptly declared that he had cancelled its sequel, which was announced at E3 this year, and is leaving the industry. Fish has enjoyed a rough relationship with fans and the gaming press, and announced his departure with a statement that read, "This isn't the result of any one thing but the end of a long, bloody campaign. You win." The Australian government's inquiry into IT pricing has returned its report, which stated that Australians pay between 50 and 100% more for software than they would in the UK and America. Among its recommendations are the creation of a right to resale for second-hand software, educating consumers about circumventing geo-blocking, and, as a last resort, a ban on geo-blocking altogether.
We're getting shafted and now it's official.
Yeah, the Australia tax is real. Yeah. They said so.
One of the things that's interesting about the report is that they found no reason for this price disparity, and they asked people and it was just like, it's always been like that. Initially, it had always been like that because of a weak dollar and, I guess, you know, having to physically carry things across the ocean. But I mean,
yeah, it used to be the import fees and that's what we were paying for, But
obviously with digital distribution, that's a non-issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're still getting shafted.
But none of the publishers even bothered to defend what they were doing when they were asked in the inquiry. They just said, because we can, really.
I think from now on, when we become aware of this, maybe we should actually draw our listeners' attention to the fact that they can circumvent this stuff, because it is getting frustrating, particularly seeing in digital distribution channels that the prices for Australian games on occasion, not always, not across the board, are just crazy when you compare them to everything else that's going on.
So how would you suggest that our listeners circumvent this?
Well, there are a number of retailers that...
Are we going into illegal territory?
No,
because
no,
we can't
no.
really talk about it.
No, we're going into perfectly legal territory. There are other ways of purchasing video games apart from directly from, you know, EB Games or directly from Steam. You can even just, you know, get European codes for things or American codes for things, and you will be able to pay a fair price, the price that everyone else is paying, and that is perfectly acceptable. So buyer beware, do not pay the prices that you are currently paying for video games.
Activision Blizzard, owners of Call of Duty and Warcraft, have bought themselves out from media conglomerate Vivendi for $8.17 billion. CEO Bobby Kotick said, "We should emerge even stronger, an independent company with a best-in-class franchise portfolio." While World of Warcraft subscriber numbers continue dropping, it still has 7.7 million players worldwide.
So they're now like the world's biggest and most expensive indie studio, right?
Yeah, like even bigger than Valve.
Yes.
If we consider Valve to be an indie, they're now
so
not the biggest.
Money.
Yeah. Yeah, Vivendi were trying to offload them for ages because Vivendi are just losing money every minute. So it was kind of nice that they just bought themselves. I think that's clean. That's neat.
They probably got a pretty good deal, really.
Yeah, they probably did.
Well, we knew what they were getting.
A bargain.
Yeah.
And we also have one last piece of news. Saints Row 4 has been refused classification once again. The publishers resubmitted the game with the controversial anal probe weapon taken out. Apparently it's more than that. There's the drug use issue now. Drug use as it relates to incentives or rewards, and that's no-go. So Saints Row 4 is still refused classification.
They're going to try one more time, apparently, only this time taking out the incentivized drugs as well.
Yeah, it looks like they've actually just renamed the old M rating an R rating, and they continue to be arbiters of taste rather than, you know, actually a proper ratings board.
All right, well, that's it for the news. Coming up on the program next, Candy is going to be playing Battle Block Theatre.
You are listening to Zed Games, heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
Now you're listening to Zed Games. Candy, you've been playing a game called Battle Block Theatre.
I have. Battle Block Theatre is a colourful little platformer in the same vein of Super Meat Boy. I had heard a few things about it from friends and took my time in downloading it. Kind of wish I'd gotten onto it immediately. It's out on Xbox Live Arcade, and this is so much fun. The story is you're some funny little stick puppet. You're out on a ship, the SS Friendship, with a bunch of friends, including one named Hattie Haddington. The ship runs into a storm and crashes on what you think is a deserted island. Hattie runs off, puts on some magical hat, and this hat changes him, and he is no longer the friend to everyone, and he becomes some evil dude that, as it turns out, there are these super intelligent cats on this island. He alerts the cats to your presence on this island. I know, it's clearly a very simple storyline, as you can tell. Anyway, so you go in, you see all of these cats, you become prisoners on this island, and you are forced to perform in this kind of sadistic little theatre where you're put through death games almost. So each level is avoiding death. And it is possibly the cutest little well, it's violent, but it's not the kind of violence that I normally go for. It's not the blood and guts gruesome, it's cute.
The whole taking someone captive and forcing them to go through these trials for the sake of their amusement.
Yes.
That's kind of twisted. Is this an all ages game?
Oh, look, you know what? It's like The Simpsons. Just because it's a cartoon probably doesn't mean it's for children, because it's still a little violent. And you know what? Kids probably wouldn't quite understand what's going on. To them, you're just running around trying to, you know, avoid moving saws and not get blown up by bombs and things like that. But it's all very cute. You play a cute little puppet, like like if my 10-year-old cousin did some stick figure drawings, put them on a paddle pop stick and waved them around for me. That's sort of what this looks like. And the whole game is, all of the cutscenes in between each chapter go back to these gorgeous little puppet stick figure cutscenes, and I'm loving it. It's probably not for children, though. I don't think.
Yep. So how would you describe the gameplay?
The gameplay, it's very fast-paced. It's one of those absolutely gets your mind. You need to be like 10 steps ahead of yourself in the whole game, because you are literally jumping from burning hot platforms that shoot you off into the sky. But then while you're in the sky, you really need to like double tap the A button 100 times very quickly to jump yourself even higher, to jump up to a floating cloud. And it's all that sort of, you know, like you just need to be really ahead of the game and get used to jumping high and fast. And you kind of need to, I think I'm up to chapter 5 now, and it's actually taken me 5 chapters to just get into the habit of launching myself into it and not pausing and timing things. Because I was one of those kids, you know, when I played Mario, I would time it and I would wait for the blocks to reappear or the floating platform to come back to me instead of just running for it. And I find that if you just launch straight into it, everything is timed perfectly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so yeah. There's a lot of like faith-based platforming, I guess. I just
totally.
Made that up.
No, you know what? That's exactly what it's called. There is a lot of that. But there is a lot of, the point of the game is you're moving through each chapter. You need to collect gems along the way. 3 gems will get the exit open for you. The more you collect, the better, obviously, because then you spend those gems inside the prison releasing other prisoners, which then you can play as. So every time I've gone into a new level, I've been a weird-looking little character. I started off with a star-shaped head. Now I'm some Like, I look like a cardboard box with dog ears drawn on. Like, it's all very cutesy looking. So that's kind of the point of the whole thing. But yes, there's a lot of that faith-based platform jumping sort of thing.
You're listening to Zed Games, heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
You are listening to Zed Games, and Candy, we are still discussing Battle Block Theatre.
Yes.
Is available on Xbox Live.
Correct. Other things about the game that I really love, rather than like boss battles and those sorts of things in this game, you have time trials and obviously other little collectibles and things along the way. So not only do you collect the gems, but you can collect a ball of yarn, which is always very difficult to try and get to. If you get that, then that's great because that helps you purchase. You can use that as sort of bartering with the cat guards in the prison, and you can buy great weapons and things. The time trial levels are pretty amazing. You're given a very short period of time to get from start to finish, and this is when I realised you had to launch yourself into it because you cannot time things in these time trial levels. They are incredibly difficult, and they have taken me time after time after time to get through it in, you know, under a minute, which is sort of what most of them require. Nice little bonuses, though. Sometimes I'll throw in like a free gold hat, and if you can find the hat and manage to carry it with you all the way through to the end, then it multiplies your gems by 10. Little things like that. So it's worth going through these levels and risking your life over and over. But it doesn't matter if you die, because your little character explodes, but then he builds himself together again, and it's great.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see in these sorts of games where, you know, it's platforming, but it's just brutal platforming, that usually there's not much penalty for dying. You can just basically start where you died, which I think is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, they'd get a lot more broken controllers and more complaints.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of checkpoints, which is also really good because I'm one of those people that when I've just finally managed to get over that epic 6-foot wall covered in spikes and land safely on the other side, you know, I'm really disappointed when I land in a pit of boiling water and then have to go through that all again. But quite often when you get through a really difficult part, the creators have recognized this, and I feel like all of the checkpoints are perfectly placed so that you're not backtracking and frying your brain trying to do the difficult parts again just to get to the next round.
So Battle Block Theatre, Candy, can you give this your Candy seal of approval?
Oh, mate, if I had more than two thumbs, I'd give it all of those thumbs up. I really think it's a lot of fun. It's cute, it's fun, it's gruesome but not sick gruesome, I think. It's a great drawing style. If anything, check it out purely for the narration. The music, it's irritatingly good. I don't get sick of listening to these catchy little pop tunes, and you'd think you would. But I've had it playing on in the background, and it has not annoyed me in the slightest. And I love it. I love the art style. Love the little pop-up figures. Like, I don't think I can say the word love enough when describing this little downloadable game. It's great.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for that review, Candy.
It's all right, man.
Next up, Lee and I will be talking about The Shadowrun Returns.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Zed Games, and Lee and I have been playing a PC title called Shadowrun Returns.
It's a tactical role-playing game on the PC, and it was birthed through Kickstarter, and the development company Harebrain Schemes is led by Jordan Weissman, who was the creator of the original tabletop role-playing game, Shadowrun, that this is based on. So it's kind of, you know, for indie games, this is kind of a big deal because everyone's been watching these Kickstarters as they've been, you know, doing phenomenally well. But this is the first major release, and the first time we really get to see, you know, what people are getting for their money from these, you know, the promises of having that nostalgia sold back to us, essentially. Yep.
Mm. Now, for the listener who hasn't kept up with current events and doesn't know that crowdsourcing is the latest big thing when it comes to indie development, Lee, can you give us just a bit of a background story on what Kickstarter is?
Yeah, Kickstarter is a website that allows developers to essentially petition their fans or potential fans to provide them with the money required for their upcoming project. It's kind of like angel investors, except unlike an angel investor, you don't necessarily get anything at the end. You're just providing money to see the product made, and generally you are, you know, given the promise of at least a product. So in this case, they asked for $400,000 to make this video game. They ended up making that in the first 28 hours.
Whoa.
And then settling at around $1.8 million. So that all came about last year, I believe. And they've been, you know, one of the most prolific as far as like showing off what they've been doing and talking to their fans. So it's been nice to see that from start to finish, this game, you know, actually got funded and got made. And
it really is, yeah. It's incredible, the Kickstarter thing, because instead of pitching it to a big company that is, you know, obviously interested in the bottom line in how this product is going to do financially, you're pitching it to the fans who want this game, and this will allow these kind of riskier, more niche products to actually be released. So this is, I think, only one of a couple of games that has actually come out through the Kickstarter process.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that are flying under the radar now, but this is one of the bigger ones. And I'm also one of the first ones to kind of clear that $1 million mark when they weren't asking for anything anywhere near that. So very nice to see that they succeeded on that front. So it's based on Shadowrun, which is a pen and paper role-playing game property that's basically a combination of high fantasy with cyberpunk elements. So it's set in the future. It is a complicated franchise, but it's the sort of thing that really, you know, is born out of the massive cyberpunk interest of the 80s. And, you know, it's something that is very colourful and full of character, and it is just right for video games. So it's a shame that there haven't been that many based on this property, and it is nice that the original creators are the ones who actually really get to nail it down.
You're listening to Zed Games, heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
So Shadowrun Returns is harkening back to the isometric RPGs of old. So it has a, you know, playing it, it feels very much like returning to, you know, your Baldur's Gates and Fallouts and Torment and all of those things. In fact, it's really refreshing, actually, to play something like that again, but something that has obviously the kind of sensibilities and artistic stylings that we're more used to now. It's a very painterly game. Razor, you've been playing it.
The thing that struck me about it most of all is there's a lot more reading than I thought there'd be. There's a lot of text, a lot of dialogue that you have to read through, which is very much like those old school games that we talked about. The original Shadowrun game as well. Remember that for the Super Nintendo? Did
That's
you ever
right.
play that one?
Yeah, yeah. This, in fact, it references both the Super Nintendo one and the Sega Mega Drive Shadowrun games. One of the stretch goals was if they made $1.5 million, they would be able to incorporate elements from those games into the main plot of this one. This thing is loaded with nostalgia.
So a big part of this game is the story.
Yes.
Can you tell us whether the story is any good or not?
The other thing about Shadowrun is that it lent itself very well to noir-style stories. And in this one, you are a Shadowrunner who is basically just kind of a mercenary for hire who is contacted by a former friend through a video message, and he is telling you that in this video that he has been killed, but he has a massive life insurance policy, and if you can find out who killed him, you get to cash in. And so the game has you traipsing around the streets of Seattle as you find out who was really responsible for your friend Sam's death. And there are a number of twists and turns, like there are in all good noir stories, and I don't want to spoil them, but it does get very, very weird about midway through in a very fun way. You mentioned that there's a lot of reading involved in the game, and there is. The writing is phenomenal. In fact, this is probably one of the best written games I've encountered for a long, long, long time. You know, when you've got voice work, and particularly when you've got full voice work in a game, you know, you can only have so much writing because that stuff is expensive. And if there are issues with the dialogue, it's too late. You've got to lock the script in months in advance so that you can plot around that. Whereas with this game, you know, they can just keep going back and iterating and editing and adding new responses and making the game respond to every little tiny thing that you've done, because writing a new line of dialogue costs nothing if you don't have to, you know, pay an actor to voice it. So, yeah, I do think that this is an incredibly well-written game. In fact, what it reads like and what it plays like is sort of less of an RPG at times, or a computer RPG, and more of a tabletop experience where you're given, you know, everything's sort of broken up into these distinct little scenarios that follow one after the other. And you have a lot of options within that as to how you're going to, you know, choose to handle them. And then they will enclose, and that, you know, that's the end of that particular part of the story, and then you move on to the next part. So it doesn't have that kind of open world stuff to it. It doesn't have very many sort of side quests, or, you know, you can't just wander off in one direction. But what you get instead is a really well-directed story that you have a lot of control over, and that you feel like you have, you know, you're actually a character with agency in this, rather than just like someone who's being directed by, you know, the game designers in the first place.
Yep.
So that's really refreshing.
There's a community component to it as well?
Yeah, there is. The game also launched with a fully realized editing suite. So players can go in and add their new objects to it, or their own adventures. And what's really great about this is because the kind of people who are enthusiastic enough to support this game through a Kickstarter are also the ones who, you know, really wanted it, not just so that they could play a new game, but so that they could kind of play the old pen and paper RPG games as well. So they're adapting all of the old, you know, adventure modules that were written for this game over its, you know, 20-year existence. And these things are slowly being imported into the Steam Workshop. There's only a couple up there now, but if something like Neverwinter Nights can be used as, you know, an example, you know, it might well be that for your $20 purchase, you're not just getting a really, really solid core campaign, but you're also getting access to, you know, all of the best Shadowrun adventures that, you know, have ever been. So there's an incredible amount of value that's kind of, I guess, presupposed into this, but it looks like it might actually live up to that expectation.
Does Shadowrun Returns for the PC get the Lee thumb up, or the two thumbs up, or as Candy said it?
All of the thumbs.
All of the thumbs.
All of the thumbs. Yeah, look, I think if this is something that, you know, you might be interested in, if you are willing to read a lot and you're willing to engage in an environment that I think, even though it does seem like a very video gamey setting, you don't really encounter something that is this particular, then yes, you will get a lot out of Shadowrun Returns. I'm certainly enjoying it, and I'm finding that it is a real change of pace. It is a pleasant place to be, and I can't wait to see what the community does with it.
This is MC Lars, and you're listening to Zed Games.
I'm speaking with Phil Larson, the Chief Marketing Officer of Half Brick Studios. Now, They had a very exciting announcement this morning. You guys announced a new game.
Yes, we did.
Colossitron, Massive World Threat.
Sounds ominous. So basically, you play as Colossitron, which is a giant robotic snake from space. He crash lands on Earth, and basically the idea is to cause destruction and chaos everywhere you go. Do that by actually extending Colossitron by attaching these nodes, and each node is a different weapon. So you can actually grow him to be like this massive, like slithering fortress of doom. The military is attacking, and that's essentially you are defending yourself while you're causing havoc.
This just in, a colossal robotic monster is destroying cities across the globe.
Send in the infantry.
I'm a huge fan of Voltron, and in the brief moments that I spent playing the game, I kind of felt like it had a Voltron-esque vibe. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional or not?
It's definitely inspired by a lot of kind of the classic anime and cartoons and things like that, kind of that kind of style. And an interesting fact, the team that created the game, their nickname is, they call themselves the Voltrons.
Yep.
So it's probably got something to do with it.
Now, collecting money is a large part of the game. Where does the giant beast get the money from?
It's not actually collecting money. It's just that's the dollar's amount of damage caused.
Ah, I see.
So, you know, as you blow up buildings and things like that, it'll tick up. So it starts racking up tens, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage. And that's effectively your score.
You guys have a release date planned for Colossitron?
Not yet. No. We don't have a release date, but hopefully we'll be able to reveal that pretty soon. Yep. Just sort of, you know, showing the core game at this point, and as soon as we've finalized our plans, then we'll let everybody know.
Thank you very much for speaking to Zed Games today.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
We're out of time, guys. Thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Zed Games. We'll be back next week at the same time. Catch you guys next week.
Bye. So long.
Thanks for listening. This has been Zed Games, recorded live in Brisbane on 4ZZZ and heard nationally thanks to the Community Radio Network. For more information on the show and to join the Zed Games community, head to our website, zedgamesau.net. That's spelt Z-E-D, or send us an email at contact@zedgamesau.net. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Zed Games is produced with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation.